Hello, I'm Susan.
And I'm Carol. Welcome to Kickapoo Nightlife, a news program about all things related to the half of every day that is night. We share information about how to protect natural dark night skies with smart lighting developments, explore astronomy events, visit animals, plants, birds, and more as they and we live in the dark. And we'll share what is being learned about daylight, darkness, and human health.
Today we'll discuss the beauty of the night through the eyes of an artist, Ken DeWard, whose work is recognized nationally and especially in the Driftless region of Wisconsin.
This program is sponsored by the Geminids, Ursids, and Quadrantids, meteor showers, big light shows hitting our skies in December. Natural, brilliant, and require no electricity. Check them out for a spectacular show. Meteors, a gift from the heavens this holiday season.
Now, our calendar of events for December. A super full moon will occur on December 4th, and it rises at 5:14 p.m. The Kickapoo Valley Reserve in Lafarge will hold its annual Friends of the KVR holiday happening on Saturday, December 6th, all day, at the Visitor Center. The earliest sunset of the year will occur on December 8th at 4:17 p.m. Fair Meadows Bird Sanctuary, located in Milton, Wisconsin, will have a birding day, which is an independent walk, on December 9th from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. Registration is required by noon on December 8th. Directions and instructions will be sent to your email soon after you register. Call Southwest Bird Alliance at 608-255-2473. A special program, the Driftless Dialogue Regarding Dark Skies, will be held on Wednesday, December 10th, 5:30 to 7:30 at the Kickapoo Valley Reserve Visitor Center in Lafarge. No registration is required, and we encourage you to attend this important event.
The December Phenology Report. Winter birds are visiting bird feeders looking for a tasty meal. Watch to see how many birds you can identify. Flying squirrels may visit your feeder at night. Watch them using a red light. The last of the sandhill cranes are migrating south for the winter. Watch for the first snowfall and check out the tracks that birds and animals have left behind. Along streams, river otters search river bottoms for winter-chilled frogs, crayfish, and carp. Ruffed grouse pecking through the snow, uncovering food. Luna moths are tucked away in cocoons on the ground surrounded by fallen leaves. White-tailed deer bucks shed their antlers. Look for antlers on the woodland floors between now and the end of January. Chickadees perched on branches, fluffing up to keep warm in the cold winter air. Listen for their calls. Chickadee, dee, dee. Now a word from our sponsors, the Geminids, Ursids, and Quadrantids, meteor showers. The Geminids are usually the strongest meteor shower of the year, and if you are a meteor enthusiast like me, be certain to circle December 13th and 14th on your calendar. This is one of the major showers that provides good activity prior to midnight, as the constellations of Gemini is well placed beginning at 10 p.m. and onwards, peaking on December 14th with 120 meteors per hour. The Geminids are often bright and intensely colored due to their medium slow velocity. Persistent trains are not usually seen. The moon will have a waning crescent phase on December 13th and 14th, rising near 2 a.m. Central Standard Time. Observations prior to this time will be moon-free. Observations after the moon can still be successful by facing westward with the rising moon at your back.
The Ursids are active December 17th to 26th. It's often neglected due to the fact that it peaks on the 21st and 22nd, just before Christmas, and the rates are much less than the Geminids, which peak a week before. Expect to see 10 meteors per hour during the late morning hours at its peak. There have been occasional outbursts when rates have exceeded 25 per hour. A slender crescent moon will be present in the evening sky and won't interfere with viewing this shower.
The Quadrantids are active from December 28th to January 12th. It has the potential to be the strongest shower of the year, but usually falls short because of the short length of nightly maximum activity of about 6 hours and poor weather experienced during late December and January. The average hourly rates we can expect under dark skies is 25. These meteors usually lack persistent trains, but often produce bright fireballs. Predictions for the show is a peak of about 9 p.m. on January 3rd. However, activity will be severely compromised by a full moon. The brightest moonlight will obscure all the brightest meteors, so the best hourly rates are expected to be less than 10. Support our sponsors. Go out and watch their holiday shows. Appreciate their talents and the beauty and excitement they bring to us.
Well, we're interested in how different people experience the night, dark skies, and our world after dark. Artists have a unique perspective, and so we'd like to find out from them how the night and darkness influence their work. So today, we're going to share an interview with Ken DeWard, who some of our listeners know because he and his family lived here for many years. Check out his website, kendeward.com, to see his beautiful paintings. Let's talk to Ken.
Hi, Ken. It's fun to talk with you again. I have very fond memories of studio time with you. I learned a lot, and I still hear your voice. This is really true, Ken. I hear your voice when I paint. Behind me, step back from the painting. I never forgot. That made such an impression. It's been really valuable. I mean, I use it all the time, and it cues me into other things you said that help me orient to what I'm doing with the paint. So
very nice to hear that, but sorry to hear that. You know, I've definitely heard that before, and it's like, yeah, I can imagine. That's what you need to have in your head is me, you know? Good luck with that one.
But it's just great because it gets you out of your own thinking.
Sure.
You know, and your voice is different than mine, and I remember one time you were standing right behind me, and you just put your finger on my shoulder and you pulled me back and you said that. And I thought it just made such an impression. I never forgot that, you know, so.
Good to hear.
Yeah. So Carol and I, she's my co-host and she's not with us right at this moment, but she thought it would be interesting to explore an artist's idea about painting night scenes. Because to an artist, the night is interesting. It's not to be feared. It holds something daylight doesn't hold. And the normal dark nights and dark skies are part of how the world works. And we hope more people will explore the night with an artist's perspective of curiosity. So you can find an artist finds color and light and beauty in a night scene. And you somehow bring that alive on a painting so other people feel that too. And we're hoping that people will start thinking about it maybe from an artist's point of view, and it'll help them go out and look at it a little differently.
I think that's an artist's role anyway. Usually, no matter what we're trying to show, it usually, at least that's what I've heard from folks, kind of opens their eyes to see it differently, because even if it's something that's not all that beautiful, it's something that we kind of take for granted. And I think we take for granted the skies. I remember them in Baroque continually. Like I said, Chicago was something you couldn't see into the night sky at all, but moving to Baroque, yeah, these vast skies overhead and galaxies and everything else just makes you feel so small and yet so connected that there has to be more out there. But as an artist, I think our job is to put something out there and hopefully people look at it differently and not just walk by the everyday scene, whether it is a night scene or an everyday rural farm scene. You know, I mean, there's a lot of beauty that we're just too busy in our lives. But yeah, I think night paintings are amazing. I've enjoyed them. I've been fascinated by them my whole life, probably growing up with Hopper's Nighthawks in Chicago definitely put me on a road of that. But there's something very magical about, just like you said, being out in the evening, the quietness, the stillness of it.
Yeah.
It's just very, very beautiful.
Yeah. Well, when I was really young, I mean, young grade school age, my grandmother had they might be 5x7 or 6x9 or some very small oil paintings on the wall. And they were dingy. They were obviously very dirty. You know, they hadn't been cleaned and they were very old. And there was a moonlit scene of a lake and some pine trees. And They were not very good paintings, but I remember them very clearly. They were my first impression of the power of a painting to evoke an emotion. Those dingy little things, when I looked at them as a child and saw moonlight on the water, I felt the magic of that scene, as poor as those paintings were.
Right.
And they were the first impression I had of what a painting could do for a person. Isn't that interesting, those crummy little things?
It is, yeah.
So I'm wondering if you had an early experience that gave you a sense of what a painting was and drew you to be a painter. What did you have any sense of, or did that come more gradually? Was that?
I think
not...
it came gradually. You know, I was drawing cartoons and other things and with friends when I was little. I mean, I've had a pencil in my hand probably as far back as I could remember to start with, or some kind of a brush or something. But so it's been a whole life's journey.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there was, like I mentioned, the Nighthawk painting by Hopper, because I think it left a lasting impression on me, but I was already involved in it. I didn't grow up with any really old paintings or even nice paintings on the walls. We had family portraits and other things, but there weren't any artists around me.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember being very jealous of my friend Peter Borgia. We were in fifth grade and we were reading about Da Vinci, and Da Vinci actually hung out with the Borgia family. And here my artist buddy's name was Peter Borgia, so he had this long line connected somehow back to Da Vinci. And I was just jealous as all heck, because here I am, this Dutch name person, you know, without giving into Van Gogh yet. It was very interesting. But that's an early thing I remember. But as far as the other spot, no, not exactly. But there's been a lot of influences throughout my life that I'm continually, to this day, being inspired and moved by people's interpretations, be it living or dead painters.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, what draws you to do a night scene? Because you're always looking at scenes to paint situations, and you, most of the time we look at those things in the daytime. So do you, what sets your mind up to think, oh, that would be a night scene? Is it you're looking at a night scene, or you look at something, you go, that would look cool, I'm coming back in the dark? Or how do you
pick that? It is very rare that I'll see something in the daylight that I think would make a good nocturne. I could think of that a couple times. It was like some old churches or something, the silhouette against the daylight. Definitely had that feel that I thought, well, I'll go back and check that out later that night, because I thought it might. For me, though, for a nocturne, usually I'll go out one night and go out and scout around to a lot of different places and see what I like, and then go back the following night and paint it. Because by the time you find something, it's more fleeting than a daylight painting. You get a very small window. And for me, not looking back at Innocent Turner and some of these other ones where you just had a moonlit scene, I'm usually drawn to past twilight. The sky still has some of that nice blue, deep violet color in it, the warmth of a illumination, be it a street light or a house light or something against that. There's a lot of temperature drive that really excites me as an artist. So usually it's hard for me to see that in my head without visually walking upon it. So like I said, even with this beaver moon that we just had, I went down to Rockland a couple of times trying to scout out a couple different areas one night, then went back the next night. And of course it was socked in with clouds, so I lost out. But I spent more time searching for what would make a nice nocturne scene. But it's something I walk into that strikes me. And because of, again, those temperatures, I usually, when I've done a lot of plein air events, I end up doing a lot of nocturnes, and most painters will wait till 10 o'clock at night to go out, and they'll work till 2 a.m. or something, and I'm way too exhausted for that. And besides, at 10 it's too dark. I like it 8:30, 9 o'clock, where there's still some flavor in the sky, like I said. So you're getting this, it's not like everything's just dark. So I am really more excited by the warm and the cool that I see within a, and, but then I could think back to doing, I remember when Mars got really close to the moon or whatever it was, when I was in Viroqua, and I went out at like 3:30 or something and set up and did a small painting. And it was the moon was strong enough that there was plenty of light. And it was weird to see the little red planet up there. So I've done some celestial paintings, but usually my paintings are more driven probably by what I've seen through Hopper, and more some human element of a lit house or something, or a cityscape or something against the night sky.
Yeah. So Say something about you're talking about you're painting out there at night. You're not going out and taking notes or making a sketch or a picture and going back inside and painting. You are actually painting out there at night.
Sometimes, yes. Not always. There are times that I will work from a photograph. And I've read numerous things about Frank Tenney Johnson. Some contemporary painters I know say, just go out at high noon, because then the shadows are flat. It gives you the same thing that the moon would give you. You're just shifting all the values a lot darker. So you could paint a nocturne in the middle of the day when you don't have strong raking shadows. It's a different kind of a lighting. Mm-hmm. And I'm not real good at that. So I'd rather go out and experience it, see it, either take some mental notes. I think that's how Van Gogh did Starry Night. He would observe it from his room there. I think he did it when he was with the, where was he? I can't remember. Sorry, my brain is not what it used to be. But he didn't do it from life as it's been portrayed. He actually did it from memory and from studying it. So you go out on a scene, Redfield will do that. Go look at a scene numerous times over and over again and try and imprint it in your mind, and then go back and paint from your memory as well as what the scene gave you. And if you have a camera, that's great. I mean, the cameras nowadays take very good night scenes, so it is nice to be able to have that as a luxury item. I still like to work from life when I can.
So I think it might be interesting to describe a little more. You're going out there at night to paint, and the light is not what we sit here in the daylight and we look at our colors on the palette and they're supposed to be pretty true, right? But you're out there at night. Are you using a headlamp? I mean,
yes.
How do you see the colors and mix colors and do the visuals to get what you want?
Some of that becomes second nature. So they often tell you when you set up your palette, try not and change it, because you instinctually are going to start grabbing certain areas that you know what you need. At night, like you said, I've got a little miner's light that I strap on the top of my head. I painted with a guy in Florida that had a big marine type battery. He had studio lights overhead. There was so much hum coming off all the lights. It was like, oh, you're ruining this nice quiet night. For me, I like the little miner's light because every time I look down at my arm palette, I could see the paint. When I look up at my canvas, I could see what I'm looking at. And if I look up at the scene, it's not strong enough to affect what I'm looking at.
Okay.
So that's the other thing. It's far enough away usually that it's not affecting this little light that I have on my head.
Okay.
But the thing about that, I remember being in Italy using a street light, which has a little bit of a greenish flavor, and I had no idea what I was going to get. And then when you bring it in, sometimes you're happily surprised, and sometimes you're like, holy cow, this is a train wreck. You know, you won't know till you get it into normal light.
Uh-huh.
But there are usually 9 times out of 10, there's a lot more green in a nocturne, it seems like, the green light. So leaning in that direction makes for some interesting things that happen. And usually it's fun and invigorating, and it doesn't always give you what you want, but it could be very exciting to do.
Yeah.
And yeah, you don't always know till you get in what you've got. It is some, even that little miner's light is not very strong, so I'm not really seeing it as it is. So I'm trying to go with what I think and what I know, but there's a little bit of a learning curve there. You know, it takes a little time, but it's exciting. It's nice. It's quiet. It's serene, more so than during the day. There's just a calmness to it. For me, I've often found it to be a very nice, tranquil, almost meditative time to paint. So, yeah, it definitely has its different take than painting during the day.
Well, I think that's fascinating, because if I thought how I was going to try to go out and do something in the dark with a headlamp, I get stymied very quickly. I think I would really have to think that through, you know, how that would work. So
it isn't that different, though. You'd be surprised. You could even go out in the yard and give it a wing, you know, and just see what you come up with, you know.
Yeah, the ones I've done have been indoors from memory. Right. Using a very limited palette. I'm not doing complex street scenes like you've done or that kind of thing. It's just like the moonrise over the hill, and I'm keeping it to, you know, a couple of colors and just trying.
Which is smart.
Yeah. So what responses do people have to a night painting? When you have, like you say, you do more at night when you're doing a plein air competition, you might do more at night, you're out there at night more.
Well,
Do people like them?
Eastern Maryland, for instance, is so hot. It would be 100 degrees during the day. So a lot of times you would take shelter by heat by painting at night, late in the evening. And I've done nocturnes either at the close of the evening, be it 8:30 to 10, or I'll go out at 4 a.m. and paint till 6, because then I'm getting a little more light. I'm getting a little, it's not so dark. It's not midnight or 2 a.m. And that's fine. It's fun to do it that way too, because then the light comes up and you could see better for what you're painting versus the other way. It gets really dark as you're painting, so it's harder to tell. So during events, I would, and you're there painting all day, and you have the night as well. It's either that or, you know, go to bed. It's not like you have anything else to do. Your family's not there, so you might as well paint. And for Easton, like I said, just because it was so hot, and there were very interesting scenes that I've definitely found, even just going to Vermont recently where we're out chasing the fall colors, there was still some beautiful little town scenes that were just gorgeous. When the sky is past the pink stage, it's getting very, it's, you know, almost past, well, it is past twilight, but there's some flicker of light happening in the city in that little town, which I think is very beautiful and just hard to capture, but fun to try.
Mm-hmm. What's the response when you say you're at a plein air event and you have daytime pictures and nighttime pictures? What kind of responses do people give to that difference in perspective?
It's such a personal thing. You know, I've done different sales over the years, just trying to see what people would be more drawn to, and there's no rhyme or reason. And even when I did the show this August, people that walked out with a painting said, "Oh, I could hear the screen door slamming on the house." It was such a personal thing for them that it didn't. I've sold nocturnes, I've sold day scenes. It's more of the connection to the person, just like you said with the little paintings that you saw that left an imprint in your head. Whether it conjures up a memory for them that they had or some young time that they remember, I think paintings just have to fit with somebody. There's no, and I do them because of the fascination I feel, and then you hope that the viewer feels that as well. It's not something I do because I sell so many of these, I might as well do them. It's like when I do snow scenes. I don't sell a lot of them, but it's beautiful, so I do a lot of them. It keeps me loose in the wintertime, and it definitely does help me as a painter, but it's not something I do because, yeah, they're going to benefit the family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you do all your work outdoors or most of your work outdoors and some in the studio? How does that divide up for you?
If I can, I try and go back and forth. It's rare that I like to just work from a photograph. I like to at least have a color note or something. So I will try and do something on location, but there's times that I'm using a camera because I've been doing this for so many years that at least I could read better into what I get from my camera than what I used to do, to where I could hopefully keep it from getting too stiff or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the idea of doing these snow scenes in the middle of winter. If I just stay in all winter long and stay in my studio, I'll see myself get stiff. Whereas if I go out and do plein air, it definitely helps me in the studio to stay more fluid. So for me, it's something I have to do just in order to kind of keep that feel that I'm chasing, I guess.
Yeah, so the fluidity comes from when you're on site and it's live and the conditions are changing, you have to work quickly. So
right.
You can't dawdle and think and... Yeah.
But then it's nice to bring it back to the studio and complete it as a painting. So that is one thing I will do. It's rare that I finish anything out on location. I will generally try and get it built with all the information I need. And then the light has changed to where when I'm back in the studio now, I'm not in front of the scene. So when I'm painting it, I could definitely think more in terms of design and the painting itself, what it needs versus what nature gave me. So there's benefits, and I read that about Soroya taking things back and forth, working from cameras and photographs as well as working from life. I think they both kind of blend each other nicely. If I could do it, I try to do that.
Mm-hmm. So back to historical paintings, and I think back before there was electric lighting and these people were doing night paintings, they didn't have headlamps.
Right.
Do you have any idea how they would have done the process of making a night painting?
Well, like I said, I mean, even when I think of Frank Tenney Johnson that did a lot of stuff out west, he would deal with day scenes and flip the values, like I mentioned earlier. So he wasn't doing it on location. Van Gogh did not do a Starry Night on location. So I think there's some memory that was done and then interpretation. But then if you look at Turner and some of these other people, they were out on location. And I'm sure the paintings were smaller. You know, I've been to Russia to where this gentleman would go out continually and just do these little 6x8s. He had them all over the studio. They had boxes of them. It's like he'd do these quick grabs. And that's a great way to do a nocturne because you get less time than you do in a regular day scene. It's really fleeting. I mean, I guess when you get after midnight and it's just dark, it's not really getting any darker, but the moon is still moving, but it is still for that twilight time, I guess, which is dusk, let's call it that, but still a nice time to do a nocturne. It's very fleeting, and it's a better idea to do something small, as well as gestural, as well as taking some photos.
Yeah, one of the ways that
twilight. I remember being in Russia a couple of years back. We went there in June, and they have the white nights, which is supposed to give you a longer window of twilight, which I thought is fantastic because twilight is always so short. You can't even set up your easel. You already have to be set up. You're lucky to get a little study or something or pop some photos. So I thought, wow, this is great, because they literally say it's kind of like being in Alaska where you're just in a longer window of twilight. But what we found is that longer 2-3 hour window of twilight just meant that the mosquitoes were able to tear you up for a lot longer than what they would in the normal time frame, you know? So it was not, it wasn't at all what I anticipated.
Did you get any good paintings out of it?
They were rushed. The mosquitoes really push you out quicker than the light. So it was nice to have the light, but the mosquitoes were horrendous. So
that's interesting.
But no, it's a nice experience. It's a nice thing just to be out there and to be able to. And like I said, I still remember painting the Mars scene and just the tranquility of it and just the absolute awe of the evening sky. You know, it's like just to think that when you look up there, I don't care what religion or how spiritual you are or aren't, it's like there just seems like there has to be so much more out there. We can't be the only ones. We can't honestly believe we're the only ones in this whole world and galaxy that exists, you know? It's like, it's just overwhelming to me.
Yeah. Well, in closing, I think that's a really good note to end on. I hope people can think about their artist's mind and their creativity and think about what the night might offer, because it's inspired poets and artists for all of human history all over the world. Right. Classically, Chinese and Japanese poetry is a great example of that. The moon is always a factor in it. And if they can go out and think about anything beautiful they can find there, it might make their lives a little more creative too. The night is very good for that.
I would strongly encourage that.
Even
if it's out in your own little backyard, you know, I just think that's great.
Right. And you're finding lots of that beautiful scenes and feelings in very ordinary, everyday places that you go and paint. You're not going to some bizarre, strange, exotic place. So I hope that that's an inspiration for all our listeners, too. It's just been really great talking to you, Ken.
It's been a pleasure, Susan. It's been great to see you and to chat with you again. It just brings back so many good memories, you know?
Yeah. That was really good to have had that studio time. And I hope that you continue to do really well where you are now.
Thank you. The same
to you.
Thanks for the time. I appreciate it. It's been fun.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, that's our program for December. We'd like to thank our guest, Ken DeWard, for an interesting and picturesque discussion.
Get outside and watch for meteors this month.
Remember that dark skies protect the environment and the health and well-being of all who are living here, including us humans. Happy holidays. I'm Carol.
And I'm Susan. See you next year in 2026.